We don't have anybody to sing a song about whether or not you're ready or not.
Oh, that's a sad day. We'll have to pretend like Justin just sang and had himself on mute.
Yeah, Justin's not here to sing us a song. I don't know what to do.
We probably shouldn't even do a podcast now. That's the only thing that matters, and it is Justin's song. So we'll just end it now.
See, and he could have done that song by the Fugees. I would have had him sing that.
Oh, that would have been a good one. Yes, I would sing it, but I'm not Justin, so it doesn't work when I sing it. But yeah, that would have been the perfect song for that.
Stupid Justin.
Of course, he's not be here right now. Oh, what a jerk.
We will blaze on without him today. And this will be a slightly different format because now is the intro music. Hey, Cine fans, and welcome back to another episode of the Cinema Slayers podcast. I did that incredibly awkwardly because I do have a different mixer and I am playing around with things. So we are just trying out fun, exciting, new little doohickeys and whatnots on these. And I also did that when I was like playing the intro music. I'm like, yeah, I can reach over and grab my tea. And then mid grabbing my tea, I was like, oh, fuck, the song's about to be over.
It sounded good. It sounded just like when it's done on the actual posted podcast. So I think it worked.
We shall see. Who knows? It may or may not stay in that way. I've got a little button I can hit and play sounds now. I've got several buttons I can hit and play sounds now. So it's just fun to, you know, to try out things. And if you guys could not tell by the little opening podcast banter, it is just Heather and I for this episode. And we will be talking about the new, I don't want to say like indie film. It just, you know, it's not a big summer blockbuster film, Ready or Not. I don't know how to describe it. It's not indie. It's not big budget. It's just somewhere in between.
Yeah, I would agree.
So, yes, we will be talking about the new movie, Ready or Not. I don't know why I'm just so... I'm sorry. I'm actually playing around with my mixer screens while talking like I should not be doing because it's just incredibly distracting. I'm just trying to find the best settings, and unfortunately, I'm doing it mid-record. Like a jackass. I'll stop. I'll play with my shit later.
I feel like anytime you get anything new for the podcast, that's like your Christmas morning where you're just like, that's all you want to do is play around with it until you've just figured everything out.
Well, that is all I want to do is play around with it. And we haven't recorded since I got it. So I needed something to play around with. I needed other people, and I'm just now able to do that.
That's okay. It actually, I don't think it sounds like you're doing too much craziness with it. So
I don't know. I need to stop. I need to quit looking at this and playing around with it. I really am getting super distracted. It's got a lot of lights on it, and it's not your normal mixer lights. They're like different colors. I'm not even talking about like the little light bars that show your levels and stuff like that. I'm not even talking about those. I'm talking about, I've got these multicolored sound pads. I've got a big red record button that is straight up staring me in the fucking face. It's very intimidating.
I think you'll manage to push through. I feel like you can do it.
You say that. I don't know if that's true.
So if you just like stop talking mid-sentence in this, I'll just know it's because you're distracted by all the lights.
It might be because I'm legitimately scared of this record button. It's so big and it's so red and it's like angry red. It's a bright, angry red.
I feel like you're like a deer in headlights right now or something when you're looking at it.
I am a little bit. And then I'm looking down at my board and like all the solo and mute buttons are these, like the solo buttons are these, you know, this bright festive green, and the mute buttons are also a shade of this drastically scary red. I don't know. I feel like
sounds I'm spending cool to me.
Way too much time talking about this, especially when I could have been talking about this at the beginning before I played the music. The music indicates I'm moving on. So let's talk Ready or Not. Heather, what did you like about that movie?
Well, I do want to say that like I didn't necessarily have the most like highest expectations going into it. I remember seeing the trailer and, you know, just being like, well, sure, I guess. But I think also because they've just had so many horror movies coming out, and you know, I know they're gearing up probably for fall and all the Halloween stuff and all that that's coming out too. So I just kind of felt like it was just like, oh, okay, yeah, just another scary film that they're going to try and do. But I honestly really did. I enjoyed this much more than I expected to. Honestly, first thing that I do want to say about this film is the cinematography, honestly, I think is really great. And just everything and how they shot it was really cool. Like the darkness of the house and the woods, the dim lighting, to give like the effect of the old home and the haunting vibe of it. Even like the costumes, honestly, all of it was great too, just because, you know, like if you're watching the movie, you see, you know, and this movie, for those that don't know, is about, you know, a bride who on her wedding day, her in-laws ask her to partake in a game, which is a tradition that they have to play a game on the eve of the wedding, which we found out later is because they feel as if they're going to be cursed and killed if they don't, you know, play the game and complete the game. So anyway, so they have her take part in this and it's her wedding day. So, I mean, it's like everybody's still like in all their wedding gear and she's got this really like antique, classic wedding dress and with all the lace and everything. It's very like old school, very antique looking. And all of the attire, even of the people, the family and everybody at the wedding has that very old, like classic, you know, old fashioned look to everything that they're wearing, which is kind of cool, I think. I mean, it's just cool because it almost gives you the feel of like it doesn't necessarily tell you the setting or like the time of the movie. You know, it's like it's modern, but at the same time, it's not. And I think that that's kind of a cool element with how they did this movie. And I just think it kind of added to the mysterious vibe of the whole story. So I thought that that was a really cool way that they did it. Yeah, because it just kind of like, I don't know, just kind of brings you more into like the mystery of everything that they're doing. So I liked that a lot. And then I also do... I think the fact that this movie, it's written more of as if it's a dark comedy. And I think that that helps because I think that's what makes it as good of a movie as it was, in my opinion. It's not necessarily classified as like a dark comedy, but that's pretty much what it is with the way that they approach the murders and the storyline itself. Yeah, I mean, like it's just kind of like these people that think that they're going to die from a curse due to a deal that they made with Satan or something like that. So it's a pretty heavy storyline and plot at its core. And, you know, if it had not been for those humorous elements that they added into it, I think it still would have been an interesting movie because of the root of what the story was about. But it would not have been quite as entertaining. And having it as a full comedy also would have taken away from some of the good performances that were done in the more serious moments, which also really added to like an important element to the story itself and to the movie. So just the concept of the story, telling it the way that they did was the best way to do it because it's such a unique story. It was original enough to be be able to take some liberties with it. Because it was, for the most part, unexplored territory, if that makes sense. And most of those liberties, I do think they worked well with how they did it. And I mean, I think Samara Weaving, who plays Grace, the bride, she really did a fantastic job as the lead. I have never seen her anything else before, so I didn't know what to expect from her going to this movie either. But she really went through like every range of emotion so seamlessly. And really was very strong in the role. And I think all of the performances I think were really mostly pretty good. But aside from Samara Weaving, Adam Brody was definitely my favorite. He was just very endearing and very relatable in how back and forth he was with his morals and what he wanted to do. And I don't know, I think it's kind of cool that like ultimately he ended up kind of being the one guy that was trying to get Grace out. You know, and I did also like Mark O'Brien as Grace's husband. He was also a very strong character. He was very good in his role because you could see how much he loves Grace. And at first, he really wants to help her out. But then you just kind of see this real, I mean, you even see in his vulnerability when he's like talking to his mom in that scene, when he's kind of tied up so that he's not able to help. You just see him like talking to his mom about everything. And you just see a real vulnerability in him when he's talking about that and how he's changed because of her and all these things. And then I like that twist at the end that they just have of him completely turning on her because he knew basically that he was in a no-win situation. You know, if he let her go, he would either die by his own family or by the curse. But also, if he let her go, he wouldn't get to be with her. So he just kind of decided, screw it, because he wasn't going to get a happy ending in any scenario. So it was unexpected that they did that, but in a good way. I really did enjoy that. And I don't know, I just think in general, I was surprised with how the movie ended. I did assume the bride would get out alive, but I kind of did not expect the whole family to die. And I actually thought that at the end of the day, the curse was not going to be real. Because, I mean, throughout the movie, they kind of tease that, or they kind of go with like, nothing's actually going to happen if you let me go and all that. And I really thought that that was going to be the case, that there wasn't really going to be a curse that was going to kill them, and that it would have been the bride killing all of them, or that they would be arrested and put in jail. So, but the fact that it did end up being real and they all just died of this crazy imploding death because they didn't end up killing her was just, it was so crazy, but also awesome that they went there with that. And I totally didn't expect it. And I always enjoy at the end of a film where it's horror or thriller that I don't see what's coming. So it was refreshing in that way. I also liked that, like by the end of the film, Grace is just, she's completely full of rage and just insanity. And she just, because of all the stuff that she just went through and everything that she's seen happen, she was just like, I just love at the end, she was like super defeated, but also kind of like, nothing surprises me anymore, and just embraced it. And she was just embracing what was happening and what was about to go down. And it was just very entertaining to see like that turn in her too, where she's like, by the end of it, she's like, yeah, I've seen it all at this point and I'm just done with it. And, but yeah, I just loved that element of it too. It kind of really added to kind of a satisfaction sort of feeling at the end of the film. I was just really surprised in general by how much I enjoyed it. So what about you?
Well, I think you are drastically underselling Adam Brody.
I did say he was my favorite
in this movie.
Right.
Well, you said besides the bride. And like I said, I think you are drastically underselling what he does in this movie. I think he's hands down the best actor in this movie. The way he goes and portrays just being like on this alcoholic binge and goes to the lengths he does in and out, where, you know, you never really know where he stands for most of the movie. And I don't mean that in a bad way. That's very much the way the character is meant to be. You know, he's meant to be that guy that's just an alcoholic, just completely apathetic and just numb person. And he portrays that. I would not be surprised if he was legitimately just drunk the entire movie because of how well he was playing that. I mean, because his character at the beginning of the movie is a little kid, and ultimately because they were playing hide and seek at the beginning of the movie, because he outs the guy who's trying to hide at the moment. He witnesses that guy being shot a couple of times with a crossbow or a bow and arrow. And
yeah,
he's really affected by that and the numbness that would come from like seeing that happen in years and years of, apparently, if they're not sacrificing people, they were sacrificing goats. And, you know, his wife was the same mentality of his family. You know, they were very much, you know, she had the mentality of she would rather die than go back to the life she was living before. And so she very much fit in with the rest of them. And I mean, there were so many times throughout the movie that where he was actually more or less hoping the curse would get broke.
Yeah.
So that it would just end the horrible, like morally repugnant existence that is his family.
Right.
Like he even specifically has that line when he's talking to his sister of, do any of us deserve to be alive?
Right.
You know, yeah. And she's like, well, my kids do. And that's right after you see a scene of one of her kids just going down the same line that they had gone down. And I think that's actually what really sealed the deal, is like they had just come across the kid, which it was hilarious whenever the bride knocked out a kid after the kid shot her in the hand. She just straight up cold cocks him and knocks him the fuck out. And it's amazing.
Yes, it is.
And so, you know, the kid wakes up and he's like, I caught her. I almost killed her, but, you know, I shot her in the hand and then she got me, you know, and he was so proud of himself, though. And I think that that scene is what really sealed Adam Brody, just his character being like, fuck this.
Yeah.
Like, no, not even your kids deserve to be alive anymore in this family, because this family is garbage.
Yeah. Because even his sister was like, oh, I'm so proud of you. Like, they didn't even ask him to do it. And he was just going around trying to kill her like they were. She's like, oh, I'm so proud. And you just see that look on his face. And he's just like, okay, this is really bad, you know?
Yeah, he was like, oh, this is garbage. Like, it should not be that way. Like, this family needs to end. And, you know, and apparently he had Googled, you know, how much salt, like sulfur or hydrochloric acid to put in some wine or something to just kind of fuck with the family to help her get out.
Yeah.
You know, and then he's ultimately killed by his wife. But It's just the way he portrayed that. Like, there's that one scene where he comes across her like in like the game room, or not the game room, in just one of the rooms.
Yeah. Like study, I think it was.
Yeah. And then he's like, look, she's like, help me. He's like, look. And at the time he hadn't really come to the realization, but you could tell he was still at odds with everything, because he was like, look, I'm not going to be the one to catch you, but I have to like alert people to where you are. He's like, I'll give you a head start, you know? And he does. He gives her a head start. Then he calls for everybody, and you know, they all show up to the room and they're like, oh, how'd she get away? And he's just like, oh, I don't know, whatevs.
Yeah. And he was like counting all slow too. And he was like counting, he was taking his sweet time with it, because he's like, I don't even want to do this.
He's like, I'll give you 10 seconds. And then he does that whole shit of like when you're a kid, and he's all 2 1/4.
Yeah.
2 1/2, 2 6/10, 2 7/10. Like, he's counting to 10 in the slowest way ever. And, you know, and at one point, like, his dad lash, and it's in the trailer, too. But I liked this scene, even though it was ruined by the trailer because of the impact of everything, you know, because the trailer actually kind of makes Adam Brody's character come across kind of like he's just a sociopath.
Yep.
Like, he just does not care. And he's just like, you know, he just has no emotions. And then when you're watching the movie, you realize, oh no, he has all of them. He's the only one in his family that truly has any of them.
Yep.
And I would argue that he even has them more so than his brother.
Yeah.
Because he realized that even then, you know, that she, the bride, should be the one that lived, and not his family, including his brother, you know? And so, you know, in that scene, whenever the dad gets mad at him, slams him up against the wall, and he's like, do you think this is a game? And he's just like, yeah, it's hide and seek.
Yep.
You know, and I loved it, because in the, like I said, it comes across sociopathic in the trailer, but in the movie, it comes across as he's mocking his family.
Yep. I love that.
Like, he's mocking their traditions. He's mocking, you know, everything that they hold dear and the importance they're putting on it. Like, that's what he's doing in the actual scene. And it's so much more impactful than I thought it would be in the trailer. But I mean, just to get off his character, because I feel like I could talk about his character for just like 90 minutes.
Well, it's honestly a very complex character, though. Like, I totally agree, though, because he kind of was, unfortunately, as weird as it was of a moral compass, he kind of was the only moral compass of that family, you know, and obviously it's because of what he's seen when he was younger. Like, the only other time apparently this family played that game of hide and seek was when he was younger. And then he was if I remember correctly, he was the boy that actually gave up where the guy was, right?
Yeah.
Or was he the one hiding?
No. Okay. He's the one that gave up. The husband is the one that was put in the wardrobe or whatever. The
closet or wardrobe. Yeah. So I think just because of that, like, obviously that just completely wrecked his world after that even happened. And you can just see that in everything. Like, it's just kind of like, he hates anyone getting married. He hates any like family things. You could just tell, like, even when they're going around the table and passing around the little like thing where the card comes out, and he's just like, get this away from me. I don't even want to see it, kind of thing. And you know that it's like, just because he's like, I hate it. And I just like, I hate my life, kind of thing. You know what I mean? So he really is a very complex character, and he's a great character. And I think the only reason I say that, like, I mean, he was my favorite just because of that and how well he did play that. But, and you're right, because he has to just kind of play that. He plays that, that one range of how he does his emotions really well, but he does just the one. And he's supposed to be numb, so I get it. But I think just because Samara Weaving basically just went through kind of every range of emotion throughout the movie, I think that's why, for me, I'm just like, I think she did an equally phenomenal job, just because you have to see, like, the, she thinks this is weird, and then she thinks this is, like, funny, and then she's like, oh, I'm terrified, and oh, I'm angry. Like, she goes through every range of emotion. And that's why I say that hers is equally as good, but his is more subtle in, like, a very clever way. And so, I mean, definitely it doesn't take away from how great his performance was. It was just, I think they were kind of on equal playing fields, but in a different way.
I want to talk about that scene, though, that you were talking about when they were passing around the card thing, though, because that was actually going to be my next point with it, too. Was just in general, the subtlety of this movie was great. Like, there were a lot of times that the movie kind of gives away a lot, but it's just done in such a subtle way that it doesn't spoil anything. It's just in, it just builds upon itself. And one of them was, like you said, the scene when they're passing around the little card game thing and all this other stuff. And, like, I was going to bring up when it gets to Adam Brody, and it doesn't mean much at the time, but it means so much more later in the movie. He's the one person that whenever it gets to him, he just grabs it and passes it on. He's very much of, I don't want to be a part of this. And, you know, at the beginning of the movie, whenever he's, like, you know, comes into his, you know, when he talks to his brother and his soon to be wife, and he, like, puts him in a headlock, you know, that, you know, cliche older brother thing and all this other stuff. And he's talking to her and he's like, oh, you should leave. Like, you just need to leave.
Yeah.
And you think he's just being an asshole. And no, he's being the only one that genuinely cares about her well-being. Like, he was the only person just being, like, honest with her. Like, her husband was never as honest as he was. And to me, he was the most genuine character out of all of them. And just every time with something like that, it was so great. Like, I do also want to give a shout out to somebody else. And I feel like I should be vastly more prepared for this because I know this guy from another TV show or from a TV show. And I just don't remember his name. And I am talking while I pull it up on my cell phone and waiting for it to connect slowly. Okay. And his name is Christian Brune. Anyway, it's the sister's husband. It's just always a delight when I see him, because he's from Orphan Black, and the character he plays on Orphan Black and the character he plays in this are very different. Like, in, but at the same time, they have a similar familiarity. I can't say that word anyway. And because in this movie, he very much is just a guy that he's like, oh, there's a ton of benefits from being in this family, so I give no fucks if I'm going to kill people and stuff like that. And in Orphan Black, he plays kind of like a suburban, like, house husband. Like, and that's not the only part of his role, but, like, for a big section of it, that's kind of what he is. And his wife is very much domineering over him and all this other stuff, and he's kind of a, I don't want to say weak-willed, he's just a very unsure person about himself. And but he's just so delightful, and so seeing him in this was just so fun, seeing some of the familiar traits that I'm used to seeing him have before. Like, you know, every time he gets a weapon, it's like, you know, it's an olden style weapon and stuff like this, and he's just like, what the fuck am I supposed to do with this?
Right.
Like, yeah, he gets a crossbow at the beginning of the movie. He's like, what the fuck is this? He's like, you realize this is, like, you know, modern times now, we don't fucking have to have this and shit like that. And then he goes on his phone and watches a video of how to use a crossbow.
Right. I love that.
And it's funny because there were several times, especially with his character, but just because he's also so checked out, like, it's not that he doesn't care or anything like that. I think he's just got the mentality of, it'll work out because we're rich. And so he's got that mentality. And so there's a couple of times when he could have legitimately probably caught the bride, and he didn't because he was just so absorbed into something else. And it plays off so well.
That's true. Because that's also a subtlety, and I didn't actually even pick up on that. Because more, it just seemed like he was not dumb, but just kind of like, just very nonchalant about everything. So that's kind of how I saw his character. But yeah, that's true. It's a subtle thing, but you're like, yeah, I mean, he's just kind of like, he probably could have, and then he just didn't. And even in the moments when he's like, at one point when he's like, so is there any point when we just say nope, kind of thing? And I'm like, yeah, that's, I mean, he was almost on the cusp of having morals, but just didn't follow through with it.
See, I didn't even take it as him almost having morals. I took it more of him just go, like I said, having the mentality of we're rich, it's fine.
Yeah,
we don't really have to do this, because I don't think he really believed in the curse. I thought to me, it came across more of he just thought it was just an eccentric rich person thing. Like the curse wasn't real. So that's why he's just like, can we just stop? Because, I mean, we're rich. We'll be fine. There's no real curse, guys.
Right. Yeah, that's true. I could see that. Where he's just kind of like, okay, guys, this has been fun and all, but I think we're good, kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And a couple other things I want to talk about with what I really liked about this movie. I really liked the runtime, which comes in like right around 90 minutes, which for a movie like this is fucking perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And this really calls back to when me and Justin talked about Crawl, where it's the perfect length before it falls off the rails. Like if this movie went 10, 15 minutes longer, it would have overstayed its welcome. It would have fallen apart under its own weight. It would have just been so ridiculous. It couldn't sustain itself. But by putting itself at 90 minutes, it kind of gets in, gets out, you know, gets to the point. It doesn't waste your time. It really doesn't give you time to dwell on how ridiculous the whole fucking movie is.
Right.
It is, because this is a ridiculous fucking movie. It really, I really kind of worry about who came up with this idea and wrote like a horror movie version of Hide and Seek.
Right.
And then made it funny. I'm like, oh, that's a sick individual. That person is not all right in the head. They're like, oh, let's make childhood games insanely violent and we're going to make it funny while we do it. And but that's what this movie achieves, because this movie was genuinely funny. And I will disagree with you a little bit, where I wouldn't call it a dark comedy or a black comedy. I would actually just call it a horror comedy, because the elements that it does use for humor and stuff like that do fall on the horror side of things.
That's true.
It's very much like Shaun of the Dead with how it melds horror and comedy. Like this movie somehow also uses comedy to build tension, which is insane, because a lot of times the comedy aspects are used to alleviate tension, to help it build more, and to give the viewer a false sense of security, so that whenever they bring tension back, it actually re-grips you. And in this movie, they actually used comedic elements to build the tension, because especially at the beginning, when there was a lot of jokes that alluded to the dark history of this family, they were actually giving away a lot with that. But in doing so, they did it through humor, like, because they were really kind of building up the whole what the fuck is actually going on here elements with horror. And that was really fantastic to me. I really loved the way they did that.
Yeah. And also, it's interesting because when you mentioned about how it's like, what kind of person like writes this kind of thing? I didn't actually realize till I was looking it up. Ryan Murphy is one of the writers of this. I didn't realize that.
I don't really feel like Ryan Murphy did much, though. I think he might have been a script doctor.
Because
I'll say this. I don't feel like Ryan Murphy is capable of truly putting something together like this movie was.
Oh yeah.
And I know that sounds terrible, and apparently he did have a huge hand in it. This is a different Ryan Murphy.
Is
not American Horror Story Ryan Murphy.
Wow. Okay.
This is a horror writer. This guy also wrote Skinwalkers. He also wrote Wrong Turn.
Oh.
Yeah, this is not the normal Ryan Murphy.
Okay, yeah, I totally was thinking it was the other Ryan Murphy.
Oh, and I take that back. He didn't even write on those. He was just an assistant to Mr. Gilbert, who I don't even know who that was. He was just an assistant to somebody on those movies. Oh, he was an assistant to a producer on Wrong Turn in Skinwalkers. That's it. He was just an assistant. Yeah. So he wrote a couple things called like A Minutes Past Midnight, The Mill at Calder's Inn, and a short story called The Narrative of Victor Carlock. And that's all he's done until Ready Impressive. Or Not for that writer.
It's like sick and twisted, like, because you think, who does this? But it's kind of impressive to think about how I feel like it's a creative story. And like I was saying before, it's pretty unique. I mean, not to say it's the, like, there's no elements of it that are, you know, copied or you feel like you've seen before. But as a general rule, it is definitely a unique story that you haven't really seen done before. So I think it's kind of impressive to think, like, he doesn't have a whole lot under his belt prior to this. And this is a really creative story. Him and Guy Busick, apparently.
Yeah, and I was about to talk about Guy Busick. So I think the way I'm looking at this, just based on what I'm seeing with the writers, I feel like the man named Ryan Murphy wrote a horror movie with it, and I don't think that was really going over well. And Guy Busick came in to write it more and it added more of the comedic elements, because he's also a writer on a show called Stan Versus Evil.
Oh, okay.
Which very much blends traditional horror elements like monsters and witchcraft and dark magic and stuff like that with comedy. Like, that's all that show is a comedic horror show. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like he was brought in to actually bring the humor into it, is what I would think of when I'm just right. And I could be completely wrong. This is all just speculation, but just based on what I'm seeing with writing credits and stuff like that, I feel like that's actually where it would come across from. And like, I'm looking at these, like, with the directors and stuff like that, like the two directors, they worked on VHS and a movie called Southbound and stuff like that. So it's like, this kind of feels like a breakout for kind of everybody involved. I mean,
yeah,
Samara Weaving, she's been in just a handful of things. And I mean, Andy McDowell and Adam Brody are kind of the biggest actors in this.
Yeah.
I mean, Henry Prizerny, he's been in a lot of things. I mean, he was the bad guy. Well, not even the bad guy. He was one of the perceived bad guys in the first Mission Impossible movie with the whole, you know, in charge of the Mission Impossible squad and whatnot and stuff like that. So that was very much, you know, these people have been in a lot of things, but this movie just kind of, like I said, I really feel like it elevates itself past the sum of its parts, you know? And I really think that, like, by going the route of just, you know, keeping it short, and I mean, they really kind of get to the meat of everything very, very quickly. You know, they do the pre-wedding, you know, conversations that kind of allude to some stuff, and then they have the wedding and the pictures, and that kind of alludes to more. And then, I mean, pretty much within a couple of minutes of that, their hide and seek has started. You know, they're telling the story of the, you know, essentially how their family sold their soul to the devil, and just kind of going from there. And it's very, very quick. I mean, it does actually start with, you know, a guy getting crossbowed a couple of times, but, you know, that scene does end kind of quickly. But I like how they tie back to it too. Like, you know, that was the only time that's happened in like the last like 30 something years or something like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, the hide and seek isn't something that happens a lot when it comes to the games, but it is something that, you know, it's always the possibility. And it really just kind of makes me wonder, like, what's the point of the other games? Like, why is it hide and seek? And I guess this is something that I kind of had a problem with this movie, was the fact that I don't know why hide and seek was the game that somebody had to die with, when I feel like there would have been others that would have been better.
Yeah, like truth or dare or something like that.
Well, just in general, like, because a lot of the other games and stuff that they play are like checkers or old maid or, you know, things like that. And I'm like, well, why aren't there any stakes for those games? Like, why is it just hide and seek that has these stakes? Like, what made that the game that had the stakes?
Yeah. Yeah. They don't really explain that. That's true.
And also, like, why? Like, how did the family find out the rules? Like, did the devil actually sit there and explain the rules of everything? Like, well, you can pick any of these games, but if it's ever hide and seek, you have to sacrifice a living soul to me before dawn, or your entire family dies.
Or who was their ghost relative that they were trying to please or whatever. Maybe he was...
No, that is the devil.
Oh, that was the devil. Okay. But he was called something else.
Yes. It was like Lebec or something like that. Mr. Lebec.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Because that was the devil, ultimately.
Okay, yeah.
That their like great-grandfather sold his soul to the devil for a gaming empire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and that's, yeah, I mean, it kind of just, like, did he sit around in that chair that they, you know, kept alluding to and seeing, and he just sat there and told them, like, these are the rules? Was it maybe, like, were the other games and playing them, was it, like, just a test of, like, hey, would you be willing to do this if it turns out bad? Like, I don't know. You're right. They didn't really explain that super well in the movie.
Yeah, especially because, like, all games like that have a defined winner or loser.
Right.
You know, so like, why is it that if the new family member loses that old maid, they don't die? Mm. Or if the new family member, like, I understand that they're trying to make it like unique to the effect of this is something that doesn't happen often or something like that. But I just really kind of wish, I don't know, that something, there was like one more piece there that would have kind of solidified that aspect of it a little better. Because while it's not completely necessary to the story of the movie or anything like that, I feel like it would have made it gel a little more if there was just that there that would have kind of added to the seriousness of it. Like, it would have made it more understanding of why the family acted the way they acted.
Yeah. And I guess, I mean, well, I guess technically we're kind of on to our dislikes now, right? A little bit. But yeah, I mean, I was just going to say that, like, it's interesting because you hear the mom, or Andie McDowell, you hear her saying, I've only had to play this one time since I've been in this family. But it was weird because it felt like all the other family members, like, that there was this daunting thing of like, oh, I remember when we did this before. But they didn't, because they had never experienced it. And they were just all just really ready to go. It was maybe the first time. Yeah, it had to have been the first time all of them have ever had to do that game and try to go and hunt them. But none of them really even, like, you know, were wavering and doing it, except for maybe the wife's husband, who was just kind of like, oh, I don't know what to do with any of this. But everyone else just seemed like they were ready to go and they had just done it before and they hadn't. So that was kind of weird.
Well, everyone else kind of had, though, because the aunt had, because her husband was killed the last time they played it. Both of the sons had, because they were at least around when it happened, because, you know, Adam Brody's younger self is the one that gave the guy away.
Yeah, but not Adam Brody's, you know, wife, so that would have, or the husband.
Well, see, but her mentality was, you know, anything to keep this lifestyle, you know, so that's why. So accepting that as a possibility that she would either have to do that, her, like, go through hide and seek herself, or would then have to play hide and seek and go after somebody, was something she fully signed up for knowingly and wanted. So she was ready for it, you know, that just because of the mentality she had of just, I can't go back to my old life. And like I said, I think the husband was just like, I don't give a fuck. We're rich. Like I said, I just think he was more or less coming across like, oh, this is just crazy rich people shit.
Yeah. Okay. You might be right.
But I mean, like I said, I think with Andie McDowell's character even too, like, you know, the one time she had seen hide and seek happen was also the same time that, you know, was the time at the beginning when, you know, the wife's, or the aunt's husband got killed, which also kudos to her because she has a very creepy face.
The aunt or Andie McDowell? Oh, yeah.
The aunt. The aunt is very good at putting on a creepy face. And so, like, so with that, I think, you know, everybody was kind of prepared in their own way with it. And I don't know, to me, I think the way they portrayed themselves worked really well with that. I think each of the individual characters really did a good job of how they portrayed their character's version of being ready for that in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
But I mean, is there really anything else you didn't like about this movie?
I mean, yeah. I mean, explaining it that way, like, yeah, if you see it that way, then one of my dislikes about it, kind of, I guess when you explain it, it makes more sense. But yeah, because I mean, a big part of it was just like, man, these people have no remorse and they don't even like hesitate or waver, like they're just ready to go, you know. But I guess more of them had done it than I thought. I also did think part of it, like, one, like, little inconsistency inconsistency that I saw in Grace's character was, so when she realized what's happening, obviously she's horrified. And then, but like when she ends up accidentally killing that housemaid who was hiding, she didn't even really seem to flinch. And I get that she was just trying to survive at that point and, you know, just trying to get out of there and not get found. But it just felt a little inconsistent with her character at that time. Like later on, she's definitely pushed to her limits and just didn't hold back at all on her rage or anything. But, that's earlier in the movie, and it just kind of felt a little out of character for her to just, you know, when she, wherever it was that she was hiding in that little space, and then she accidentally like pushes the doors down and like kills the maid, and she's just like, uh-oh, instead of like, oh my gosh, I can't believe it, you know, which was just kind of at that moment or at that point in the movie, I felt like that was not consistent with the rest of how her character had been acting at the time. So that was just kind of a small inconsistency. And it was kind of humorous too, because it was just like, oh, whoops, you know, because all of the housemaids seemed to mostly just kind of accidentally be killed by some family member or another, which is humorous. And they tried to like play it off in a humorous way. But it was just a small inconsistency with her character. I mean, obviously nothing that like really sets you over, like really distracts any sort of way, but I was just kind of like, she's just finding out all this craziness, and like the fact that she just accidentally murdered somebody like doesn't even faze her at this point, which was kind of weird, but not too big of a deal considering the craziness that happens in the whole movie. But yeah, it was just kind of something I noticed. And then just for me, like I do feel like the blood and the gore was more than I expected. So that was a little bit jarring for me. I mean, I knew it was going to be violent, but there were just more cringy moments than I expected with it. Like whenever she's trying to crawl out of that little well, or just that little space that she falls down into, and she's climbing up it, and then she just accidentally like puts her hand over the nail and has to like get it out, and just it's very cringy, like super like unexpected jarring moments of cringy violence that I was like a little bit wincing at. And then when she's trying to get through the fence, and she just basically almost rips her body in half just trying to get through the fence, which was kind of interesting because you know that she's that desperate to just really get out of that situation. But I think it was just I guess it was a good job at doing it at times I didn't expect they were going to do it, but just it was so jarring that I didn't expect the type of cringiness that they did with it on some scenes. So that was a little bit of like a, maybe because it was so jarring, I didn't like it as much as some of the other things that did happen in the movie. But yeah, so that's really the only things, because the other parts of it, I really was, you know, I did obviously, even in some of the trailers, you see a little bit of like the, oh, someone's face got shot off. So we see that, you know, so some of it I did know was coming or expected it, but just as much as they had in it, I guess I just didn't really see that coming. So that's really the only thing for me.
See, I actually wasn't bothered by that with when she accidentally killed the third maid, just because to me, she was just in such at that point a survival, like fight or flight mentality with everything. And I mean, that maid was trying to give away her position at that point too. And so when it started accidentally happening, and I mean, she did try to stop it, but I think when it came down to it, I think especially in her head, she knew, I don't have time to react to this. Like, I don't have time to give in to what, you know, I might want to do.
Yeah.
So I think like that survivalist instinct that she was going through at the time. I mean, I think at that point also she'd already been shot and, you know, in the hand and everything like that. I think she was just so much in the I need to survive mentality of.
I thought that was before she got shot. Maybe not.
And it could have been, like I said, I don't remember at this point the exact order of those two scenes. But to me, it was just all in the stepping stones of, you know, she accidentally killed this girl. She punched a little kid. She ultimately had to beat her mother-in-law to death with a card box.
Right.
Like, you know, caused a car wreck that almost killed her, all to survive, you know, and she got a nail shoved through a bullet wound at one point too. And like you said, you got that gigantic gash in her back, trying to escape through the fence and everything like that. She was just in such a I have to survive mode that, you know, I think as the movie progresses, her willingness to do whatever it takes to survive really, really starts to show itself in a more impactful way constantly. Like, I think every step, like as the movie progresses, like every step shows her having to go to another even greater length in which to survive. And so I think that was just part of it. It was just showing that not that she was weathering away, but her ability to, you know, to freak out or something like that was withering away, because every second she freaks out or questions something, or, you know, is a second that somebody's getting closer to killing her. And I think that that scene with the handmaid or with the maid just kind of showed that, like I said, the withering away of her ability to emote at that time.
Yeah, I could see that.
And I really liked the violence. So I thought it was delightful, especially at the end when they're all exploding. I loved it.
Oh, yeah. I was like wondering. I bet some people were like, this is amazing. And actually, it was jarring, and it was like a lot of just like gross imploding. But the way that they pulled that scene off was pretty clever and humorous.
Yeah, I did like that scene because the family kind of played it off like they were vampires almost. Like all of a sudden the sunlight's there and it's hitting them and they're not dying, you know?
Right.
Like they just thought instantly as sunlight hit them, they would die. And so they all react like it. Like you would see in a movie with like a vampire, like the way they just kind of like cower away from the sun.
Yep.
And then nothing happens. And then all of a sudden they just start exploding of just into just pure blood,
right?
Like essentially like they were water balloons filled with blood.
Yeah. And I do love how like literally at that point she's just kind of like, well, this sounds about right for what's happening. Like at that point she just totally wasn't even fazed by anything she saw, so she was just like completely like, I do love seeing her change in mentality from the beginning to the end of the movie. Yeah, it was really well done in how she did that. And she's just kind of like, yeah, all right, all of you are dying. Great, because you're terrible people. Like, it was very funny how they did that part.
Yeah, and I'm not going to lie. Whenever the sister ran off with her kids, once the aunt exploded, I'm not going to lie, I laughed a little. Whenever, like, they run out through a doorway and they're off camera and then the mom explodes and then both the little kids explode. You hear, like, the boom, the boom, boom. I was just like, little kids exploded.
Oh, my.
I don't know why. It brought a smile to my face. Chuckled a little bit. So, at this point, what's your recommendation and score?
Oh, man. I mean, I do, for recommendations, if you do have a dark sense of humor or you like gory horror or comedy horror type of things, then yes, I think it's a very entertaining movie in that way. Honestly, that's not even my preferred genre necessarily. I haven't seen too many of those or been like, I love any specific ones in that genre. But I really did appreciate how well done this movie was. And it was very entertaining pretty much the whole way through. There was no point where I was like, okay, well, this is typical, or this is getting boring or anything like that. It was pretty much very amusing the whole way through it. I do enjoy how well they mix the humor with the horror and the dramatic scenes a little bit too. I mean, I think that they did a really good mix of all of it to where none of it was overdone, and also none of it felt out of place. So I think they really balanced the scales on all of that very well. But you know, if blood and gore is kind of like not your thing and you're grossed out easily by it, or you don't like twisted humor mixed with horror, you know, or anything like that, if you cringe easily, you know, maybe this isn't for you. But if that's something you're okay with and you can handle, I think it's probably kind of one of the best of that genre that I have seen recently anyway. So for my score, I'm going to give it I'll give it 78 videos of learning how to use your crossbow out of 100.
For me, this movie, like I mentioned earlier, really reminded me of Shaun of the Dead in the way that it blended traditional horror elements with comedy, and doing so in a very, very effective way. And I really, really cannot state how much I loved, absolutely loved Adam Brody is acting in this movie. I've never thought of myself as a big Adam Brody fan. And I did watch some OC back in the day. But I just really loved the way he portrayed the character he did. And I can't state enough that just how fucking fantastic he was. And so for that alone, I almost feel like that's worthy enough to recommend this movie. But if you need more, I mean, the humor works really well. The way they do the violence, I think, fits the story very well. I don't necessarily feel like it's just gore for gore's sake. I do feel like it does go hand in hand with the narrative very well. So I did like that. And I'll also say that, like I said earlier, like Crawl, this movie doesn't overstay its welcome. It gets in, it gets out, it doesn't waste much time. And the beginning of it, when it is kind of on the slower side, is done so to establish the mindsets and the mentalities needed to really kind of understand where the movie is going to be going from that point. And then once that hide and seek song comes on, which that was also a really nice touch. I loved that hide and seek song. So once that hide and seek song comes on, it really is just off to the races from that point on. And it does kind of lull in the violence aspect at times, but it does so to build tension, which this movie does very, very well. It's very good at kind of keeping you wondering what's going to happen next. So very much kudos for that. So for my score, I'm going to actually go a lot higher than Heather. I'm actually going to give this 88 punches to kids' faces out of 100.
Nice. That might be the first time I've gone lower than you on a score. Actually, second time. I think I went lower than you on like Hobbs and Shaw. But otherwise, that's the lowest I think I've done before you.
Which you're just ridiculous for going lower than me on that. Because Hobbs and Shaw was great.
It was. You loved it just slightly more than I did.
I don't know what that means. It was great. So I would typically do our normal standard outro, listing all the places and all this other stuff that you should go check out. Listen to any other episode for that aspect of it. I just do want to say real quick that we are recording this episode later in the week. Actually, almost a week later than we typically do. We're recording this way later than we typically do. And unfortunately, that means that over this past weekend, there was a mass shooting in the hometowns of Jaston, Devin, and I in Midland, Odessa, Texas. More of it was, actually, I think all of it was in Odessa, but it is the Midland, Odessa area. That's where we all grew up, except for Heather. She grew up in DFW. That's neither here nor there. But there was a mass shooting there. And through the just utterly incredibly tragic events with that, and to not get political with anything, the only thing I'll say, and I'll say that I'm speaking for myself, not necessarily Cinema Slayers as a whole, but at least for myself, I do feel like, and I feel like most people would agree with me with this, that something does need to change. And I won't say what needs to change or anything like that, because then that'll bring this into a whole other debate, and that I don't feel like would actually end up solving anything. But I do feel like everyone can agree that something does need to change to do something to prevent tragedies like this from happening again. And whatever that is, I hope it happens yesterday. Like, I hope it happens now. It needs to happen. And the one thing I'll say with that is that we don't need to regress when it comes to things. We can't look for the same scapegoats that our culture has gone to in the past to look for answers for this, because that's never the answer that will actually fix anything. We can't sit there and blame movies and TV shows and video games and music and in those forms of entertainment, because it's very much a regressive like position on what we need to look forward to and what we need to do to move forward and to find some semblance of a fucking solution to this problem. And like I said, I wish nothing more than for whatever it is that can fix this happens before the next one. And I will leave it at that.